and welcome to the fourth episode of the all-new GAK Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, who is with me today.
Hello, it's Luke. I'm the guitar buyer, or one of the two guitar buyers, I should say.
Hello, it's Joss, and I am the guy that runs the YouTube channel.
Cool, sweet. Hello, gentlemen. How are you both doing?
Great. I was a bit confused by the podcast starting and there being no intro music.
Oh, yeah.
How stupid is that?
That's right, because normally I sit here and
sing it
with something with a Floyd Rose on it and a big...
Yeah.
That was actually good. We got the podcast music from Joss. I asked him to... I wanted some new music that was much shorter because I thought our intros and outros were a bit long.
Yep. Well, I made a collage of licks and riffs.
He sent me a good sort of 2 minutes of what would have been him just, you know, sitting down with a guitar. What did he play it on?
I can't even remember. I don't know. The dive bomb isn't actually a Floyd Rose. It's just me snapping the neck off of one of our guitars.
Oh, right.
No. It is the Dean. Yeah, it's the Jackie Vincent with the Floyd Rose.
And what did you record it through? Is it through the DV Mark?
Yeah.
And then mic'd up through a Marshall 1962.
I don't even know if it was mic'd or if it was direct.
Oh, you just
direct. I think it was just direct because I had the headphones on and I was just like... Just doing all these crazy noises.
Didn't even need to plug it in. You could have just recorded it.
I could have just done that, yeah.
Boom.
Boom. Maybe that will be the music this week. I'm going to sample that.
Anyone listening won't understand why.
Yeah. I might just put it on the outro.
It sounds like an alien invasion instead.
Yeah,
I'll
put some distortion on his voice and that'll be it.
Let's do it.
Brilliant. Who needs a guitar?
Let's do it.
Anyway, how have you guys been? How have you been, Luke?
Fantastic. I had a great weekend. I feel on top of the world.
Excellent. What have you been checking out this week? Anything new and cool and interesting?
Well, I didn't get a chance to get one out of the box because they were all pre-sold and they went out as soon as they came in. But I'm excited by the new Variaxes.
Oh, the new... This is the first thing that's turned up since Yamaha have bought Line 6. It is that way around, isn't it?
Yes.
Of course it's that way around. Line 6, I'm gonna, yeah. Anyway, yeah. But...
First thing that they've done sort of together as a collab.
Which is brilliant. I'm really excited to see this because, of course, the Pacificas are... I think I saw one in the shop when I was popping in there the other day. And yeah, it looked great. It's really nice to...
Well, you say great. I mean, I think they look quite ugly. But it's
what,
a
is that just because you don't like Pacificas?
Pacificas. Yeah, but it's a four knob Pacifica with a sort of slightly outlined scratch plate. I think subjectively to me they look a bit weird, but it's all the old Variax technology in a guitar at £470.
Which is well good.
It's well incredible.
How much were they when they were the, what's his name, Tyler?
Well, they were supposed to be about 900, and then they've been sort of coming down in price for a while. When sort of Line 6 got sold to Yamaha, they came down in price, and they've sort of come down a couple of times, and I think off the top of my head, they're about 649, 699. I mean, it is still a better finish of guitar, because the JTVs were really well put together instruments.
Yeah.
So they are a better finish of instrument, but it's just the fact you can get all that stuff for £470. Mm. I think it's wicked.
Yeah. And the trios are back as well.
Trios are back. We've got loads of them.
Yeah, which is good because you did buy loads last time, but they just went straight out the door immediately.
Yeah. And now I get to give one a go, which I still haven't had a chance to do.
Oh, yeah. We should get you two trying one out together.
Yeah, we should.
I'm not really sure it's a sort of social pedal, is it? It's more a pedal for people without friends, but
it sort of replaces people.
Yeah.
So
we could have one of us demoing it and the other person just sitting there watching. Oh, that's great. That's really good, that one.
It's not really a social pedal. It's more like the pedal equivalent of social media.
Yeah.
It sort of tricks you into thinking you've got mates.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. What about...
imagine a dude sitting in his room going... I love you, pedal.
I was imagining taking a trio out for a dinner or something.
Yeah.
There's some marketing in there. Someone with a big perm, like a really 80s guitar ad, with like someone sitting there with like an Ibanez S series in a restaurant.
And a trio. I like it.
A trio.
I'm into it. Joss Allen.
Hello.
How have you been? What sort of gear have you been checking out this week?
Oh, man. I've had another week of just absolute editing, and obviously we went to the BMC show.
That's right, yeah. We're actually recording this podcast really late. We're actually recording it on the day that I need to edit and upload it.
Oh, I didn't realise.
Yeah. So the chances
are... I'll make it really hard for you.
Yeah. I mean, depends how quick I could be when we finish. I might be able to get it uploaded and sorted out today. If not, I'll put something out on the group so everyone will have already seen this this message on the group, because it would have happened in the past if this happens this way around.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I know, it's all back to the future, but yeah, I might.
So
have
when
to...
he's at the Under the Sea dance and he sees himself.
Exactly. So yeah, I might have to put this up a day late, because unfortunately when we normally record the podcast, which is Thursdays or Fridays, for then it to be uploaded on Monday, across the whole weekend me and Joss were at the Brighton Music Conference, which is a like a pro audio DJ and lighting event that happens in the Brighton Dome, which is our lovely big sort of palace-y building thing that we have.
DJ and lighting, I think, is a category of stuff that we can all agree we're very excited and passionate about.
Yeah, well, that was the biggest problem for me and Joss, was that we just don't know anything about it. It's not that I have any problem with it at all. It's that it's not at all my field.
Yeah. So can you explain to me the finer points of this DMX setup, please? Yeah. Because I've got...
Isn't DMX a rap artist?
Yeah. Yes, and he's also a lighting system.
Yeah, it was a problem. So. It was more of a problem that everything is letters and numbers, which is something that's always frustrated me about companies like Ibanez and how they name their guitars.
Yeah.
But
once upon
everything
a time,
in
there was
Pro
such
Audio.
A system to the Ibanez naming. It all made so much sense.
The problem with letters and numbers as the name of an instrument is that it just makes it another one.
Yeah.
It just makes it another... factory run, whereas, you know, when Fender released a guitar and they called it the Jaguar, like, that was such a thing and such like a cool concept.
Yeah, but they were new shapes, and I mean, Leo Fender was really trying to push boundaries, whereas I think the guitar is such a mature technology now, we're not really pushing boundaries as such, as they are just sort of refinements and
true. I agree with that,
styles.
But do you not think, you know, the S series could have a better name than that?
Well, S was based around Sabre and it was to do with the shape.
So why isn't it called a Sabre?
Because there already is a model called the Sabre, not out of the Ibanez range, but out of the guitar world anyway.
Yeah, there's the Music Man Sabre bass.
Yeah.
And I don't know, S series. It sort of, I mean, S class works for Mercedes.
Mm.
Yeah, true. But you know,
I'm not saying Mercedes drivers have to play skinny guitars.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, companies like that are consistently evolving, aren't they? So,
yeah.
I mean, at the rate that companies like Ibanez and companies like ESP are moving and stuff like that, I think that coming up with actual names for every model would be just as bad as numbers and letters, I think.
I mean,
we would be sitting here going, oh, God, what about the blah, blah, and then the blah, blah, and then they've just released the blah, blah.
I mean, if three... companies release guitars called blah blahs.
Yeah, of course.
Bad name.
The Ibanez blah blah.
But to be fair, if blah blah is going to be anything, it's going to be a pedal.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's going to be like the Miku.
Mm. Oh, I wonder if there is. Oh, do you remember the Miku?
Moog blah blah.
did you get to try out the Korg Miku?
Oh, I did.
You did. How?
No.
Oh, man.
I mean, because we were, the old podcast group were really excited about it. So excited about it that it made it into our gear of the year before any of us had even tried it out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was interesting. It was the only like blind product that has ever made it into gear of the year. We were that excited about it.
Mm.
And I was sorely disappointed with it when it came in. I mean, that every single one pre-sold.
I think
Matt Knight bought one, and I imagine... that they're all on eBay by now.
I don't know. I think they probably went a lot of the time to sort of Japanese collectors.
Yeah.
Or collectors of Japanese things.
Items and stuff. I mean, I've seen Miku, the holographic woman herself, when I was in Japan. And it's pretty incredible because it's a live band and then there's just a glass screen all the way across the front of the stage. And then she's projected onto this glass screen.
Yeah.
And I got to see that with my friend Hayate when I was out in Japan. And when they released the pedal, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is really cool. And then when I gave it a go, yeah, I was sorely disappointed. The tracking is completely insane.
Yeah.
Like, you hit a note and the whole point of it is being, you know, it's not so much as pitching to the guitar. I think you dictate, I can't remember, but you dictate the pitch via the pedal itself, if I can remember.
Really?
Do you do that? Or do you go up the fretboard and
I don't know. I never got to give one a go.
I can't remember, but I just remember playing a note, one note, and where instead of it just going, it was like,
yeah,
you know, trying to find the note. Like, you know, like sometimes when you go on the OC3, is it the OC3, the bass octave, the octave pedal by Boss, when you start playing chords or something and it just goes like,
or anything set to like a perfect, like, intelligent harmonizing when you're slightly out.
Exactly. And it's trying to find that note. It's like this, the thing was trying to sing, find the note. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Which is the whole technology behind it is awesome, but the whole premise of it with the Japanese thing as well is that she is an actual computer based item that they program words into and the melody, and she sings it. Do you know what I mean? Like an intelligent pitch shifting program. And I thought that if Korg were going to release this Miku pedal, they would come close to it in some way. Obviously, the thing that they have is going to be thousands of pounds, the real thing, you know, a real intelligent pitch shifting device, but I thought they might have come a little bit closer with the pedal, but it didn't really work for me.
Oh well.
Ah, well, anyway, that brings us neatly on to our topic for this week, which is
I had a fantastic weekend, by the way. I didn't get to finish.
Oh, didn't you? Oh, sorry. No, we sort of talked about that first.
I know.
You did have a good weekend though. You had some great big shows, didn't you?
I did.
With your pop punk band.
With my pop punk band, yeah, the Callback Academy.
You played some. Where did you play? You played somewhere really cool.
We played the Camden Underworld.
Ah, that was it.
Yeah.
And
good venue. I like the Underworld.
Good Underworld's venue. Good. What and what were you on? You were on your Yamaha SG.
My Yamaha SG.
And going through your EVH.
My EVH 5153. Yeah. Sweet. It was absolutely incredible. Yeah. Got to play with one of our biggest influences ever on their last ever UK date. It was packed and it was nice to see the guys from Don Broco turned up. We had a beer with those guys. And who else turned up? Bankle Paris turned up. Loads of... It was really cool.
Oh, cool. Really cool. Awesome. I'm to be honest, surprised that at least the last three or four shows that you've played, I've asked you what you played. And it's been the Yamaha SG. I mean, I think that's the longest amount of time I've ever seen you on a single guitar.
I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I put the Yamaha up for sale and then I took it down.
I was about to ask how the sale was going.
I took it down after about 3 or 4 days because I started to feel weird. I was like, I actually like this one. So I took it down and I sanded the back of the neck, put Seymour Duncan in the bridge, and sounds huge.
Yeah,
sweet. Loved it.
Sweet.
Yeah. Love it.
What Duncan did you go with?
It's a JB. Well, yeah, yeah. I put a JB in the bridge because I got one lying about, and then I'm going to put a 59 in the neck, I think, or I might just wait out and get a set of bare knuckles for it soon.
I think the Jazz would sound nice in the neck of that.
Yeah, a JB and a Jazz.
Yeah, it's a good combo. I think I've got a Jazz sitting around at home going spare if you wanted to give it a go.
Yeah, that would be rad.
I've got a big pile of pickups.
I bet you do.
I actually bet you do. You have a pile of pickups.
Yeah, yeah, let's do that. Yeah, I could throw some cash away.
Yeah. Well, bring it in. I'll put it in if you want.
Sound sweet, is a right. pound.
Well, I'm glad this is what the podcast is becoming a medium for now. Anyway, let's move on to our topic for this week, which I want to talk about gigging rigs this week, because I think we've talked a bit about amps on the new podcast format, but generally speaking, we've just talked about lots of different random stuff. So I kind of wanted to focus maybe away from guitars for the bulk of a podcast and talk about amps, especially while we've got Luke Taft on the podcast.
Spend 45 minutes chatting about the Blues Cube.
Well, that's true. So I thought maybe we could split it up into kind of a few areas. Price obviously seems like the obvious way to split it up, as it tends to be the biggest thing that defines people's amp purchase. But I specifically want to talk about gigging rigs. So I think maybe we should talk about what's the least amount of money that you can spend on a gigging rig, but it crucially has to be a gigging rig. I'm not talking about when people bringing something along that has to be DI'd and and mic'd up, and the bulk of it's going through the PA system. Okay. That's not really a gigging rig. Something proper that you can bring along that's reliable and sounds good, and you can actually hear on stage as well as off. Cool. I also want to talk about sort of the where the standard amount of money that people would spend on amps. Where we see the average spend going on getting something that's going to be tour hardy and really good, and then we can talk about the money is no object, where you know I'm sure we'll start talking Mesa Boogie etc area. But should we start at the bottom, and then maybe if you guys throw sort of two or three things into each category, that would be cool. So maybe if we start at the bottom, at the least amount of money, Luke Taft, you can go first.
How much do I think?
Well, I guess I was just actually going to talk about the product. And then the price will be denoted by that.
Well, I think sort of first protocol would be something like an Orange Crush Pro, especially since you're talking about reliability.
Yeah, that I guess that's a good idea. That's something solid state are always going to have over.
I wish they were available back in the day, back when my old band were touring. The band that did most of the touring were still touring. We used to keep a Marshall MG100 on the van just in case an amp went down, and it's like, we've got something. And it was always like the sort of the joke of, oh no, our stuff's going to break. Well, are we going to have to use the old MG? And it was like one of the super old MGs, so it wasn't the nicest of amps. Right. But it was very loud.
The HDFX series or like...
I want to say prior to that. Yeah. It was definitely pre-carbon and all that
stuff.
Sure,
yeah.
But yeah, it was light, it was small, it fitted on the van perfectly, and it never broke.
Yeah.
Which is what you want from a backup. Definitely. But yeah, as I say, sort of HD, like the Orange Crush Pro, solid state, always reliable, and they sound wicked.
Yeah, they do sound great. That was a real game changer for Orange. I'm surprised that, I guess, I haven't seen any immediate reactions from other amp manufacturers.
No, I think Orange are kind of out there doing their own thing enough. Like, everyone else is trying to cram more and more effects in, and Orange have gone, oh, sod it, we're just going to focus on core tone.
Yeah, true. But I mean, the Crush Pro aren't really that sort of size. Where people are cramming effects in is like Mustang size and things like that. Pro is a full gigging amplifier.
Yeah, it's 60 watt 1x12 for the little combo.
Yeah.
So I mean, that touches on the same size as the bigger Mustangs. Because I mean, Mustang do like a 100 watt twin, which is obviously the sort of bigger. But yeah, I think that would be it. Or if you wanted to stick with something with valves in, maybe like a Black Star sort of HT40, like the HT Stage or something.
I'm not that geared up on Black Star. What is the HT40? That is a valve.
Yeah, 40-watt valve, pair of EL34s. It's sort of like their answer to like a British version of something like a Blues Junior, of a Blues Deluxe.
Right, I see.
Or a Hot Rod Deluxe, even.
Price-wise, it must come in substantially less, though, than a Hot Rod Deluxe.
I want to say $550.
Really?
But I'd need...
They're around that £500 mark, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very good.
That they'd fit us,
How come they're that cheap for something with that sort of spec?
Are they built in China?
They are built in the East. I don't think China.
No.
I'd need to double-check where. I want to say Korea or something.
Korea or something, yeah.
But they're basically just really good amps for the money. I think they sound wicked. You've got a clean and like a pushed clean and then an overdrive. It's just really versatile.
No, that sounds great. I mean, I really need to learn more about Black Star, because it seems like they have stuff in like completely different price points to a lot of other amp brands. Like to get something, to get like a two-speaker 40-watt valve amp from anyone else, I don't think we'd be looking at a £500.
No, I don't think you will, really.
No.
No.
But, you know, they do what they do. I mean, I might have been a bit keen on the 550. They are...
Oh, right, yeah, this whole conversation is based on Luke's pricing.
Well, it's not like it's anything to do with my job or anything. No, 599.
Oh, really?
There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah. 550 with a deal.
Oh, that's so we're thinking, so the Orange Crush Pros, and I suppose the, I mean, I'm not sure about the 60. I think the 120 is kind of as light as I want to go for proper gigging.
For being comfortable on stage, yeah. I think, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
but they do a combo and they do a separate head for that as well.
I guess it depends how small a place you're playing.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah. I've seen people play massive venues with, like, HT, like, not massive as in, like, Wembley mic'd up through the PA, like you're saying, but I used to know a guy that would play sort of every pub in the land with a blues, a Hot Rod Deluxe, like one of the old ones, and that was 40 watts.
Those things were pokey, though.
Yeah, and sort of quite directional.
Yeah.
And kind of, you stand in front of the speaker, it does feel a little bit like it's chopping your head off.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're cool. Mm. I think 40 watts is a good giggable volume.
Fair enough. Yeah. It was just because the Crush Pros are obviously solid state, and I always think of that as being half.
Yeah, but they're proper solid state. They're not sort of down rated or whatever. I mean, it sort of depends how people have quoted output power, because Fender are really specific on how they quote sort of the power. So when it says 40 watts, they'll kind of put measured at 1 meter from the speaker, blah blah blah, that's the output power quote. Whereas others, and I think it's more of a case with sort of cheaper solid state stuff, where they quote a potential output power based on the circuit, as opposed to putting it in a room and measuring it and saying that's the output. Which is also why a lot of people kind of go, like, Boogie are really loud.
I see.
It's just because it's properly built.
Yeah.
And also speaker sensitivity makes a difference. And the Orange Crush Pros, I think, have got the Voice of the World speakers, which are like their version of a Vintage 30. And then obviously if you go for the head and run it through the 2x12, they've got Vintage 30s in them. And they're sort of 98 dB, I think, or 99. So they are loud.
I see.
In terms of their sensitivity.
Yeah, it's always an interesting thing on how different companies measure their wattage, because, of course, there is virtually no consistency from brand to brand. I mean, certainly on the bass side of things, it's practically zero from brand to brand, like what something means. I mean, if you take Ashdown, for example, I don't think you can gig with any of their 300 watt models. I think you need to aim at their 500 watt area to get something that would just be giggable at sort of, you know, I'm talking about pushing it to like 6 or 7, and then it sounds great. They sound great at that, but
beyond that, they sort of break up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you've the 500 is the minimum, whereas with Orange, for example, with their like Terabase head, which is 500 watts. You barely have to have it on two.
Our bass player was using that last night.
Yeah, they are the loudest heads. And again, companies like TC did very very well with their they had smart volume on their TC BG 250 series. They did these 250 watt combos that came in a range of different cabinet configurations, and the volume worked that 1 to 5 gave you practice volume, so it stepped up very slowly and kept everything quite quiet, and then past 5 all of a sudden it was really loud and very giggable, which was quite usable. I mean, it's weird because it's not how you expect to use a volume control, but it actually made loads of sense for an amp that was inevitably going to be someone's first bass amp and used in a bedroom as well as used. That
sounds good. Unlike most Valve guitar amps, where you have that little range of nothing. And then all of a sudden they're on.
Yeah, then everything. Yeah.
Oh, so 0 to 2. No, oh, now it's loud.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Joss Allen, what about you? What are you thinking on the sort of entry level? Well, not entry level, but, you know, the smallest amount of money you can pay for a gigging rig. It looks like Luke's pitching in at around the sort of £600 mark.
Yeah. I mean, throwing in at that sort of 40 watt thing, as I was shouting it out before we started the podcast, I'll probably go with the Marshall DSL-40. Just for the reason of like it being a classic,
like a modern
classic, a modern classic, just the whole two channel thing, foot switchable 40 watt Marshall, do you know what I mean? It's kind of, that's all that needs to be said about it. I think it sounds great. I think it looks
it's
great.
Kind of quintessential, I guess.
For a limited time only, available in 3 limited finishes.
What finishes?
Have you not seen? There's like the vintage one with like a like a wide fret cloth with like the old block badge.
Really?
And isn't there one in like some like linen finish or something like that?
It's cream.
Yeah. Summer.
No, someone's done like a linen finish. It might be Fender.
Looked lovely. I think it's in calico. do you have the new Marshall Hessian sack?
No, someone has done. Maybe it's Fender. Maybe there's it because they're always releasing weird Blues Juniors.
Yeah,
aren't they?
I'd search for something. I think I searched for Fender Deluxe Reverb earlier today on the site and just saw Fender FSR come up as a massive list of amps.
Yeah.
So yeah.
They do some a lot of special coming. Runs.
Yeah, they do.
Sort of makes me wonder if they're still making any normal stuff.
I know. Yeah.
So sorry, what were the finishes, the three finishes?
There's that. There's Pitch Black, where everything is swapped out for black.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. No, it's not.
I think it looks wicked.
Super stealth.
It looks awful.
Yeah.
Not,
that's the problem.
I mean, I think it might be a cycling thing, because sort of all black with like a matte black frame with gloss black lettering is quite an in thing at the minute, and I think that might be why I like it.
All right.
But I think it looks wicked. Not so much on a combo, but I think a head like it on top of an all black cab would look.
That'd be cool. That'd be dope. Like, that'd be
weird. Out of this world. And then cream.
Cool.
So
cool.
Three nice finishes then.
Sweet. Okay. And what was that? How much do they come in at? Do you know?
Either five, I don't know if the top, yeah, around about that five, sort of mark, yeah, five.
All right,
yeah.
So we're pretty much on the same thing. So I guess what we're saying is the least amount that you can spend really is around the £600.
We're saying like for a professional gigging piece of equipment.
That's right, and that's the idea. This can't be like, because obviously we could put the Blues Junior in, but I don't believe that the Blues Junior.
I mean, no, I don't. I think it as like specific venues. I think once again, it is a professional
and specific
piece of equipment.
Bands as well. Like, yeah, I mean, exactly. If you're a chilled out band, then yeah, sure.
Yeah,
you
know,
yeah. Sure, I mean, it comes down to valves as much as anything. I think because like the Blues Junior is a pair of EL84s, which I don't think have really got the headroom to start gigging with, unless you want it to be really sort of broken up.
Yeah.
And similarly, like a Deluxe Reverb 6V6s, they just sort of bottom out a bit soon. Whereas as soon as you move up to something with a couple of 6L6s or EL34s, then you've suddenly got a bit more headroom.
Yeah.
And they're sort of suddenly usable.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's staring at me.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. What else is on your list, Joss? Anything else other than the Marshall at an entry level? Oh, were you just, it was that your sort of one entry level thing?
Well, I mean, that's the one that I would go to, because everything else that I kind of think of in terms of, I mean, yeah, there as Luke said, the Black Star as well, but I mean, that's very, very similar to the Marshall anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all very, I mean, once you start looking at specific price points within each company, I think with guitars or amplifiers, then you start looking at very similar.
Sort of quite similar spec.
Yeah, quite similar. Yeah, spec, yeah.
Because I think sort of amp companies these days and companies in general have switched on enough that they've sort of looked at the need and then designed stuff to fit that. And
obviously
needs don't change that much.
Yeah. No, I guess so.
The only other thing that I think might be worth mentioning is like an AC30.
Well, this is I was about to list the things I'm really surprised that I haven't heard at this point. I understand maybe the AC30 might appear in the next price bracket.
Well, they're up by the 700 mark,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
They're a little bit more money, but I mean, I would still put it in this bracket.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. It's just the AC30 you still see at stadiums. You know, it's almost like, even though it's not that much money, it's still a really legendary, iconic.
Like we were saying, sort of amp manufacturers design things to fit a need. The AC30 is a little bit different, and it's kind of almost like a sort of atavistic thing that was designed back in the 60s or sort of late 50s, and it's still the same.
But I love that.
No, I didn't mean that as a criticism.
No, I know you didn't. That's the thing that separates Vox as a company, is they're still trying to make stuff exactly the same.
It's basically still got the AC30 tone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. It's very characteristic.
Controls on an AC30 aren't like controls on any other amplifiers, which is kind of one of the reasons I really like them.
There. Yeah.
They're just completely unusual.
They sound absolutely awesome when the preamp gain is just flawed. Yeah,
like,
they sound so cool.
properly dime.
Yeah, I mean, I tried obviously completely different price bracket. I mean, I could talk about that in the other one, but the hand wide series.
Yeah, I mean, the hand wide series. I would wonder if they would maybe come up later on.
I mean, I played a Les Paul through that thing, and I cranked the preamp gain on that, and it just sounds awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's sort of EL84 amps done perfectly right.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is maybe put the normal classic or custom. I forget what the C stands for these days, in the lower price bracket, and then put the one with the Ornico Blues in the middle,
yeah,
and then the hand wired in the top.
Three different stages.
You
of
get
AC30.
Amazing finishes on the on the next two sort of levels of Vox AC30 as well.
The hand wires are nice.
Linen, beautiful. A kind of linen. It is.
It's a very nice linen. Like the blue Tigon that they did.
The blue one's cool. You know, downstairs at the moment, we're currently, in our shop, we're building a couple of booths for people to like demo stuff in, like separated from the shop. So you've got like this whole, you know, not sort of playing with someone else playing another guitar, you know, 20 feet away.
It's a world within a world.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a world within a world. So we're building those booths at the moment downstairs, which is really cool. I think that's a really good thing. But whilst we are, we've had to move a load of stuff out of the shop back to the warehouse. And downstairs at the moment is one of the green Vox AC30s.
With the missing speaker baffle.
Oh, does it? It doesn't have... Ah! Yeah. I was thinking, I didn't even know we still had one of these. This is amazing.
Yeah, still
that's the one where the two speakers are just sitting in the bottom of the amp.
Yeah. That got really messed up by a courier. I have no idea how they did that. I think someone's driven a pallet truck or a forklift into it.
Wow. Still, it's a great amp. We need to get some more speaker baffle for it.
It's just unfathomably expensive. I spoke to like Zilla Cabs about getting them to do something, and then us selling it as like super B stock.
But really?
Really expensive.
Can't you make some speaker baffle?
I don't really do woodwork. There's less chance of killing yourself with high voltages.
I could do a couple of dovetail joints on bad boy.
I might. And that's the reason why we haven't given it to John.
I might see if I can like duct tape them up in there and buy it really cheap. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
That will sound terrible.
No. They're speakers.
Flappy.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Actually, there were a couple of other things I was surprised not to hear. I was surprised on the orange front not to hear like the TH30 combo at this point. And
for me, that's kind of a matter of, I guess, just personal preference.
Yeah, maybe because I was picking amps that I would like.
Yeah,
to own.
Of course. Yeah, I guess so.
I think for me, as much that's the kind of preference away from EL84s. Apart from something like the AC30, where it does that one thing.
Yeah.
If you want something that does a bit more than that, it's harder. I mean, the old Orange Rocker 30s were incredible.
Awesome amps.
I'm trying to get Orange to make a 30-watt amp with the EL34s. Yeah. And they're really missing that.
Yeah, they are great. They don't. Is that what makes them sound? Because the guitarist in my band uses Rocker 30s.
Yeah.
And like Orange are happy to give him like a TH30 head,
yeah,
and he doesn't like them. Like he took one.
Don't like.
I was like, surely it's just the same thing, but you don't have a tone control. But he practically leaves the tone flat anyway. So I was like, it's got to be fine.
Totally,
it's just
different
the fizzy top end on the TH30 that I really don't like.
Yeah, that's like an EL84 thing, just all over. Which in some amps really works, and in some amps sort of works less. I mean, the TH30s. I think a wicked amps, if that's what you want.
Yeah.
But I think Joss and I agree that we're looking for something a little bit more rounded.
I see.
Which is why the old sort of rockers work really nicely.
Mm.
Fair enough.
Because they're sort of cathode biased EL34s.
I see. Okay.
Lower power.
Okay, well, let's move up then a price bracket. So this is, I kind of want to hear what you think are the standard things that people should buy that would be tour hardy and that you could gig every day and that would sound good in every situation.
Yep.
And kind of know a bit about how much money you think we should spend on them. Joss, go first.
No, Orange Rockerverb 50.
Mate, I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you called my name and then you jumped in and said my bloody name.
So, we can talk about it together rather than doing it separately. Yeah. So you both were going to say
Orange Rockerverb 50.
So how much does a Rockerverb 50?
Well, when I bought mine, it was like
it's just a head
like 13.
About.
Yeah,
yeah,
So we're shooting straight up from £600 to £1,300 without hitting any like sub grand.
Well, I mean, you could buy. I mean, we're talking 14.79.
Yeah, uh-huh. I mean, if we're talking the standard buy for an actual professional musician.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're talking like I'm not a professional. Well, I guess I am a professional musician because I get to go on tour and I gig with my band a lot. I've had an Orange Rock Reverb 50 and I'm just the standard guitar player. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah. That's kind of in that level, right?
Sure. I mean, I wasn't saying that it was wrong. I was just...
you were saying we were wrong, Joe.
You were wrong. I was surprised to hear sort of this sort of price point at this time. By the time we jump up to the next stage,
yeah, well, it's gonna completely blow the price off.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. I think it's only because I always, from a bass player's perspective, I always think of guitar gear as being cheaper than bass players.
Right.
Gear. You get to spend less money on something that's good than we do. And because if you want an all valve bass head, then you are spending £1,500.
You're spending well.
Like, there isn't an alternative. There are no valve bass heads that are less money.
It's because they work so differently internally.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not. Yeah, I don't think it's something we're being hard done by. It is just like a totally different thing. Yeah. Like, for example, you know the TH30 head. What is that, like £600 for a 30 watt all valve head? The first all valve head, the cheapest all valve head, is Orange. It's probably Ampeg now.
I was going to say, is it Ampeg?
with the 100 watt VB4.
What about like the CTM 15? CTM 15 or a CTM 100?
The CTM 100 maybe.
I'm not saying gig a 15 watt valve head for bass,
The Ashdown.
Yeah.
How much is the 100?
£300.
What? No, it's not.
Yeah.
That's a surprise. It's like,
that's not 100 watts.
No, that's the CTM 15.
Right. Yeah, that's not giggable. 100 watts is barely giggable for bass. 15 watts definitely isn't giggable.
No, I wasn't saying it was giggable.
But you're saying you can purchase an all valve head. Yeah, fine. All right. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, the CTM 100. I believe that's a point to me. CTM 100. I've just had a look, and 999.
Okay, so I think that's slightly cheaper than the Ampeg VB4. Do you deal with Ampeg?
Yes.
Yeah, you do. How much is an Ampeg VB4?
I would need to double check that.
Why haven't you ordered any in stock?
Oh, is it VB4 or V4B?
I don't know.
I don't know. Ampeg,
I'm not the purchaser.
You are a bassist.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. I think it is about £1,200.
I was giving you the opportunity to correct yourself.
Okay. It's about £1,200. So yes, the
1095, and it's V4B. I have no idea if any of them are any good. I'm not a bassist.
That's true. Yeah, 100 watts is a little bit subjective on the bass front because it's a bit like gigging with a 20 watt amp.
Yeah.
Okay.
It could work. It could not.
Yeah. It depends what you're going for.
With a guitar,
if you want cleans, then no.
No.
I was going to say, with a guitar, if you're gigging a 20 watt amp, you're clearly not gigging a clean tone.
Yeah.
Whereas with bass, you probably want clean tone at least some of the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're talking about the Rockaverb 50.
Yes.
And that was kind of the go to for both of you, I guess. That was what you were thinking was the first thing.
I mean, I've gigged it for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, I've gigged it so much, and it's just awesome sounding amp.
Yeah, they're just wicked. I mean, through and through, good tone, totally Orange.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah. But the high gain structure on those things is just so aggressive as well.
Yeah, the Mark III's, when we were demoing them in the shop, I thought sounded absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Like, just totally out of this world.
They've gone back to essentially the format that they had in the Mark I's.
Yeah,
haven't they now, by losing the mid control?
Yeah, but adding like attenuation and some power sort of switching features and things. I don't know if they change much in terms of the circuit, but they just sound
wicked. Yeah, they sounded great.
The other thing I was gonna say is like a Fender Supersonic,
yeah,
just to kind of get something from the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Just because I think those things sound absolutely out of this world as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think really, really underrated. Not that anything by Fender's really underrated, but you don't see a lot of Supersonics, whereas you do see a lot of Rocker Verts. Yeah. You do see a lot of Hot Rod Deluxes. And
I think maybe underreceived. Like, they're just, you just, no one really took them up.
Yeah.
Well, an odd place for Fender to go on the sort of head front, I guess. Fender is such a combo.
With the amount of gain that you can achieve from those things as well. Yeah. It's not very Fendery.
Like, it's the first, like, for me at least, it's the first time Fender have really, really hit it. Like, bang on the money with a good drive.
Yeah, unlike the Machete.
Well, I heard they were good if you knew how to use them.
Really?
Wasn't the Machete Fender doing Mesa Boogie?
Well, it's Active EQ. It was one of the guys in that sort of worked in the factory or the warehousing somewhere had an idea for a design, and he basically designed the amp. And then Fender put their know-how into it, to making it into a Fender and sort of doing all the manufacturing side of things, and came out with this amp that supposedly is incredible if you use it right.
I really had a go. I really did have a go. Just couldn't do anything with it.
Steph is our other guitar buyer, who was at the Fender factory as they were
He's
released.
Also on the Facebook group a lot. Yep. He does my job a lot for me and answers questions, which is great.
Just thanks to Steph from Joe.
Yeah.
He was over at the Fender factory about the time they were announcing them, and he reckoned he overheard it and was like, wow, that sounds amazing. And then popped his head around the corner, and it was just a guy sort of riffing out with a Machete.
Maybe you need to really give it some. Yeah. I don't know. Because I was playing it in the store, and it's loud, so I mean, it wasn't at its...
Yeah.
I wish we had the booths we have now.
Almost have. They
almost
are.
Sense, yeah, yeah, on, almost, almost.
But yeah, I think it's an Active EQ thing. It's just it's tricky to set up for guitar.
Yeah.
Fair enough. What about your EVH, Joss?
I was literally tip of my tongue. I was going to say, let's throw mine in there.
That's why I'm the host.
Yeah. Well, let's throw mine in there, yeah. The EVH 5153 50-watt amplifier. It was around about the 900 and something pound mark.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely love it. Three channels. The clean is actually usable.
Really?
I mean, yes, compared to like a 6505 or a 5150 PV, where the clean is completely devastatingly rubbish.
But I found if you set it up as a drive...
Yeah.
And then instead of having a foot switch, or instead of having another foot switch, wire your neck humbucker...
My God.
...to a separate connection on a stereo jack and into a foot switch that changes pickup, and wire it through a coil, like coil tap it, then you can switch to that, and it gives you quite a nice clean tone. Like my old RG, the black one I used to gig, I didn't have a pickup switch in it. Instead, like the normal connection for a jack went to your normal sort of went to the bridge pickup, and then the neck pickup went through the other connection, and then had a box that would switch with a foot switch, so I didn't have to use my hands to change pickups.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but it worked really well. It worked really well. and I had one of those little Marshall foot switches where the two switches are really close together.
Yeah.
So I could stamp on the two and go from like the heavy drive right down to the rhythm drive on my neck pickup, which was coil tapped in sort of one foot switch. And that would back the gain right down, and I'd have a nice sort of clear, clean tone.
That's really thorough.
And there's then, just loads like of people listening, that. Like spinning and like getting all dizzy and stuff. Just like, oh God, I'm going to be sick.
Like, I really think more pickup switching should be done with your feet. Like, if you've got like quick changes, like you can't do it with your hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you think about it, like you've played in noise and heavy bands.
Yeah.
Where like, Necrophagist, like if they were trying to switch down to, or like, I don't know how Ben Wyman switches down to like the jazz break in 43% burn.
True.
Is Ben Wyman going to be your Billy Sheehan on this podcast?
Ben Wyman already is my Billy Sheehan.
Well, I know that, but I just wonder if he's going to come up like Billy Sheehan. But I've toned down Billy Sheehan. I used to mention him without fail every episode.
Is that your way of telling me to wind it in?
Oh, no. Let loose.
Let
you in a Ben Wyman.
But like the switches are so quick, and you kind of think that if you're trying to change pickup at that, you just can't do it at that speed.
Well, it depends on the guitar. I mean, I think the sort of Les Paul placement of a pickup selector is very usable live, whereas the Strat placement is not.
I mean, it is three selections, right? down, yeah, middle and up, where a Strat, if you've got a five-way selector switch, they,
well, like, exactly, mm, five-ways are not usable in, no, like in the middle of a song, mm, unless you're going from the, no, bridge to the neck.
To the neck, yeah.
It's, mm, you're not going to get it right.
But, or you can leave sort of, or you're like Stevie Ray and you can leave it for like dynamic effect, like a little bit of phrasing.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah.
I'm not a player that can rely on phrasing because I'm not good enough to have it.
But yeah, my 5150. It's great. Yeah, yeah, absolutely love that amp.
What about you, Luke? Have you got any other anything else to bring to the table other than an EVH and a Rocoverb, which are two very similar amps? Yeah, I think, well, anyway,
Supersonic was the other
guy. Oh, sorry, you did say Supersonic.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that's is that, that that's where we're pitching sort of.
I mean, I'd struggle to find anything else that's that I can think of.
I'm surprised we haven't seen any Fender combos come up, any of their larger combos.
What, anything specifically you were thinking? Like a Hot Rod?
Hot Rods, yeah.
Well, I mean, they're in the £700 mark, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would have sort of put like a Hot Rod down sort of in the lower range,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, if I, yeah, yeah, I would, compared to the pricing.
Hot Rods and AC30s and things like that down there.
I kind of, I, in my head, still have the old silver panels in there, which sounded really toppy and bright, and the drive was a bit unusable. Whereas the new Mark III's are, I say new, they've probably been out for 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah.
The black panels are actually nice.
Sweet.
Like, I think they sound wicked.
Which brings us nicely on to our third price point, the money is no object sort of thing. So it will be, I mean, it'll be interesting to hear, I guess, where we go from here, because I would consider things like the Rocoverb to be quite a top-endy price point of amps.
You don't think highly enough of amps.
I guess not. I guess I cut things off. I don't care about gear that I can't afford. So, well,
see,
I don't care about the £3,000 Fender custom shops, because I know I'm never going to be able to justify spending £3,000 on one. £2,000 custom shops, £2,500, fine. Really, yeah, yeah, into, yeah, those.
It's only when you own one and you suddenly go, oh, this is so nice.
Yeah, yeah, and then I know. You sell, I know, it because it's too good.
I couldn't.
I'm not good enough for this.
I couldn't gig a three.
I'm going to have to flog it before she breaks up with me.
Actually, you did that.
Yeah,
that's,
I did.
That's why I said,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, oh, I, yeah, couldn't. I couldn't justify having it sitting there as a spare. It was,
that's
just
why I said it.
Oh, I see. I see.
But yeah, I'm, for me, thinking custom Mesa Boogie, sort of an amalgam of two amps they don't make anymore. And doing like an Electrodyne, maybe with a second set of EQ, so you've got another EQ switchable, and the attenuation from a Royal Atlantic, which is selectable per channel.
You've actually gone for a completely custom amplifier.
Well, money is no object.
Oh my God.
If money is no object, I'm flying to San Petaluma. Fine. And I'm having a meeting with Randall Smith. Right. We are sitting down and discussing amps.
Amazing.
I'm going, okay, on a factory tour. I'm going to see where he's designed things.
So do they do that? Do Mesa Boogie do a custom shop?
No, money's no object.
Right.
I mean, the designs have got to start somewhere.
Yeah, that's very true. That's,
but the Electrodyne is just like a stunkingly good sounding amp. It's just so good. It's such a shame they didn't take off.
I don't know what it is.
6L6... it's sort of one channel with like selectable gains / sort of dynamic ranges.
Green, blue and red, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like sort of Marshall did with the vintage moderns, if you know those.
Oh, I do know. I know, yeah, what you mean.
Like that sort of thing. Which is why I was saying like a second EQ would be quite useful. Just in case you want to sort of tweak it and you can use that to drive it a bit harder. And then the Royal Atlantic is, or was, like a 4EL34 100 watt kind of like the Mesa
mothership
tape. I, compared to some of the stuff Boogie have done, I thought they were quite straight ahead.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's just the front panel when you see all four sort of EQ.
Are you thinking of like a Roadster or something?
Oh, sorry, that's the Roadster. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
They're like,
yeah,
that's a lot of knobs.
Yeah, sorry, I was completely wrong amp.
But the Electro, the RA100 had attenuation per channel, so you could run like a channel really high in terms of volume and dial it back.
Yeah.
And then run like the clean with the volume lower, so you've still got that headroom.
That's great. That's really usable. Yeah. Wait, you can do that on a lot of Messer stuff though anyway, can't you?
Yeah,
you can do yeah.
And a lot of them have got sort of power scale, like power switching, not power scaling. Like the Mark V's and stuff. The only reason I sort of didn't say a Mark V is just because there's sort of almost too many knobs to set up at the start of a gig.
Really?
Yeah.
What about the Mark V 25 thing?
See, again, I haven't had a chance to give one a go, but
right. That's within the, like, it's bang on £1,000.
It definitely wouldn't appear in this price bracket, but again, I wonder now sort of why it didn't appear alongside the Rockabubba.
25 watts, once again, if we're talking about professional gigging pieces.
Oh, you don't think it's enough?
But then, I mean, it's boogie 25 watts, so they're loud for what they do.
Yeah.
But it's sort of my aversion to EL84s.
I see.
I sort of tend to try and avoid them.
Yeah, fair
which
enough.
Is so annoying because the Mark 525 is such a wicked format. They just
such like, a cool because if that was like a 50 watt,
yeah,
and it was that small, I would have snapped that up already.
Like that was going to be my other thing of saying maybe like a Mark 525, but like a Mark 550.
That would be awesome.
So like a pair of 606s.
I see.
Instead of EL84s.
Right, because that's the jump, isn't it? It's just a Mark V or a Mark V 25, so there's no halfway house between it. It's almost like they're missing a trick.
Kind of the EL84, EL34, 606 discussion sort of is broad in general and generally rubbish, but it's just from experience, I've played a lot of EL84 amps that I've not really got on with as like a player's preference.
I see. What about you, Joss Allen?
Yeah, if money was no option, it'd be a Mark V. For me.
Oh yeah, so we definitely are straight into Messer Boogie territory. Yeah, Mark
V. Custom finish?
Yeah.
Bubinga?
No, you know the new one, the combo that we've got in the store in that almost like blood red finish?
Crimson red,
Crimson red, like, and it's stained and it's like a quilt maple.
Yeah.
That's the one, but a head form with the brown thatching grill on the front.
Yeah, like the
of
wicker.
It. The wicker, yeah. So the blood red, quilt maple, wicker thatching, and the old school Messer logo.
You know, back in the, like the old one that says Boogie?
Yeah, just Boogie, not Messer Boogie, just Boogie.
They look wicked. You know, back in the day, I'm going to say sort of maybe late 90s, early 2000s, guitarists ran a competition to go over to California to view the Messer Boogie factory, and you won what was, back then it would have been a Mark IV, I think, in like Tiger Stripe Bubinga with a PRS made out of the same cut of wood.
My God.
In the same finish. So it was like just like a matching piece of
whoever's got those two pieces now.
Yeah.
My God.
It's like just that was such a good prize.
Yeah.
It's just matching wood.
Yeah, you'd never want to share out a gig again, would you?
No.
No. But yeah, Mark V. I saw one of my favourite bands, the Swellers, play at the Hope venue in Brighton. And he plays a Music Man Armada.
Right.
Seen those?
Yeah.
The Les Paul Music Man style guitar.
With the shape thing.
Yeah, he plays the Armada, and he has one with humbuckers and one with P90s.
Right.
And he was playing a Mark V, and it was huge.
Mark V's are just wicked amps.
Huge. And he had it on the Orange channel, the second channel, for his rhythm tone, and it was so thick and just round like that, as you explained it last time, the tone that I would like to have, because I love to have top end, obviously. I turn my mids up quite a lot on my amp just for it to cut through like that sort of thing, because I think people who scoop their mids a lot, it's kind of like the amp is doing a lot of the work for you, so if you make a mistake it's not very prominent.
Yeah, and you sort of take out all the meat and potatoes
exactly
of the guitar tone.
So I crank the mids most of the time, not far enough for it to become sort of nasal honk, but like enough for it to cut through the mix a lot, so that if I make a mistake then it's obvious that I've made a mistake. And then obviously I usually have everything else at 12 o'clock, but he had this, like, it was so mid-rangey in a good way and so thick and dark, but still really, like, you know, presentable in its tone. You could still hear everything. And when he changed to the P90 guitar, it didn't change the settings, but the guitar sounded completely different.
Yeah.
Like, just full of life still. And I was like, that's the amp. And then when he switched to the Reg channel for the lead work stuff, it's just, once again, thick, creamy, and you're just like, yeah, that's the one. But I mean, you know, talking big money on that sort of side of things.
Yeah.
How much is a Mark V? How much do they retail?
Like 2-3, yeah, I want to say, something like that. Yeah, like really big money.
Like 3 for once you start talking the custom
wood finishes.
Right. And is that something they offer, or is
that? Yeah, that is something you can do. You can buy an existing amp and then get custom wood finishes.
Do they do like a range of finishes, or is it
basically
like
anything you want? Yeah. Oh, wow. They do them in hardwoods, like sort of maples, all your normal stuff, or you can just sort of swap out the covering, and you can sort of get
amazing. What's the turnaround of that? Probably about a year, that sort of thing.
Well, it's normally sort of a couple of months to get any stock anyway.
Yeah.
And then it's whatever it takes to build them. So
I mean, I shouldn't
three
think
3 to 4 months.
Yeah, I was gonna say I shouldn't think it'd be too long, because obviously everything's built apart from the chassis.
I guess. So.
And if you're getting a custom covering, all they've got to do is literally just cover it in a custom cover.
Yeah. Sometimes some stuff's available within a few days, because sometimes Westside will have stock.
They might have it. Yeah.
Have custom orders. And yeah, it's not normally too expensive.
I see. Nice. Oh, sweet, sweet. Well, that brings us nicely on to the conclusion of our podcast topic.
I was just going
to
say, if money is no object, I'd buy a Marshall Astoria, just because I haven't played one, no one's heard one, and I think they look wicked. And if I had all the money, I'd buy one now, because I think they look so good.
I'm excited for them. Very, very excited for them.
You're looking at me like I've just become an alien.
I don't know what they are.
Oh.
Just look at them.
Just look at them.
Okay. A Marshall Astoria.
Astoria.
Yeah, totally hand-wired.
It's Marshall getting into the boutique game.
Yeah, Marshall go
when
boutique.
Did they come out?
They announced them, I think, at Frankfurt this year, the Music Messe.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
The start of April. Nothing available in terms of stock until September, sorry.
And no sound clips either.
No sound clips, no one's heard them. Something of an enigma. And I like that sort of...
My drama teacher called me an enigma.
It's either an enigma or poor marketing on their part. I'm not sure which.
I think it's both.
Right.
I think they sort of announced them before they really should have done.
Yeah. Right.
Before they had everything working. But I like how they look. And really, really, really want to give one a go.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I'm sort of hoping it's what gets Marshall back in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I will look forward to them landing. Right, boys, should we move on and do a couple of questions? We are quite pushed for time, so we'll just do a couple this week. David on the podcast group. Yes, all the questions will be coming from the podcast group, as they always do. Podcast group is facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. Please join up if you're not already there, and ask questions and join in the discussion and conversation, occasional arguing, and occasionally me approving someone who's not a real person and them posting sort of 50 links to some new hand cream.
Sunglasses.
Yeah,
it's
sunglasses.
It's been happening a lot lately, hasn't it?
That's fantastic.
I keep not checking people when I approve them. I need to get better at it. I know. Anyway, first
That's
question.
That's why I don't approve anyone.
David, who is not a Facebook bot, asked, I would like to change my pickups, but I have never done it before. Is the soldering difficult? Luke Taft, you are a soldering giant.
He's going to do mine.
Yeah, I think it's really simple.
He did mine as well.
Yeah.
I think it's really straightforward.
It's just about having the gear.
Yeah, it's having an iron and sort of being confident
soldering
with it.
Soldering iron.
I mean,
guys.
Come on, there is YouTube.
Soldering iron.
I think it's important here to sort of just let everyone know that I don't iron my clothes.
Yeah.
So when I say iron, I obviously mean soldering iron.
Tools. Right.
Go ahead. And likewise, you cannot fit pickups into a guitar using your household iron.
Yeah. Although I'm now inclined to try. Nice. I'm going to fit Joss's pickups with my housemate's
great
iron.
Idea. Great idea.
I think maybe look at a couple of YouTube tutorials and see, and if you think it's within what you're capable of, give it a go. If you have any doubts, don't mess up an instrument.
It's not an incredibly expensive thing to get done by a tech at a shop. If you don't know anyone who's like Luke, or you don't fancy taking it up yourself, like me and Joss don't fancy, then yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an expensive job for a tech to do. I can't sort of quote tech prices.
I think
I don't know them, but
if you're just looking at changing over one set of pickups, it's probably worth just paying someone to do it.
Yeah.
If you think you're going to want to swap out a few, then you're going to save money in the long run.
Yeah.
So maybe look into it. Because, I mean, by the time you've bought the iron and some solder and a bit of cable and replacement pots and things, you're going to be spending a bit more money.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, David, I hope that answers your question. Sai on the Facebook group says, "Hello, guys. I'm just thinking all these pedals we talk about hark back to old pedals, apart from the Trio. And that one that does the girl's voice." Oh, the Miku. Miku?
Yeah, that's
what it's called. Anyway, let's get to the point. Do you know which are useful and not just useful and not just reissues of old things or ideas?
So essentially, are there any pedals out there that do crazy stuff that you might think are useful?
Yeah.
The question is.
Yeah, he actually finished this by saying that this could be a good podcast question, but knowing us, we probably only have half the questions printed out. Well, I printed this one, Sai. I just fumbled my way through reading it out.
Did you fumble reading it, or is it that I?
Did are you just illiterate?
Wait, where is it?
It's on the one that says Sai says under questions.
Are you okay, Luke Taft?
It could be a good podcast. What innovative pedals do you know of which are useful and not just reissues of old things?
That's the question.
What's new that isn't a reissue that is useful? I guess as opposed to new things that just like a bit cruncher is new, but probably not that practical.
Oh, okay. I getcha. Like the Strymon Reverb is new, but it's a reissue of a Reverb.
Yeah, it's just a reissue.
And I guess there are 50 billion different types of Tube Screenema, which
exactly, just,
Yeah, or just reissues. Just maybe like the Eventide stuff.
Like the Space?
Yeah, the Space and sort of any delay with like pitch shifting, so like shimmers.
Yeah.
Shimmery reverbs are quite new.
We're talking Strymon new, aren't we, with the shimmer style
stuff. But then I think it was an algorithm prior to Strymon, and it was in like Pro Audio stuff, like a rack unit or something.
So
like shimmery reverb I think sounds wicked.
I mean, it sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Like the whole Strymon reverb thing with the shimmer setting on there just sounds, or the black hole setting on the Eventide Space is really, really cool as
is
well.
Is that the one that everyone sort of gravitates towards to when they first plug them in?
I mean, that's the one that I went to literally because I'm a huge like sci-fi nut and space nut, so I went straight to the black hole setting, and it's got the shimmer setting on there as well as some really, really dark evil sounding stuff as well, so you play a couple of notes and it sounds like you're playing, you know, a multitude of notes at the same time, as well as loads of things growing at the same time and stuff. It's cool.
There's a really cool video of Saint Vincent playing through all the Eventide pedals, because like one of the demo guys turns up at wherever she's playing a gig and gives her a pedal board with all the Eventide stuff on it, and she's just experimenting, making crazy sounds,
amazing,
and sounding amazing.
She's
the way
a
she does.
Great guitarist, one of the most innovative people for sort of weird use of pedals and
things. Yeah, really textural guitar playing.
Yeah,
in places, a really incredible composition.
I like that she does things like she uses one of those old, I can't remember the name of the series, what was the old Ibanez Drive?
I don't know.
It came out the same time that the AD9 delay came out. So,
like the Smashbox series or whatever it was.
Yeah, they were coloured boxes
with the knobs
that you push in, like
to that, like the old Tube Screamer.
Yeah, so the Tube Screamer series,
the Sound Tank
was the Sound Tank, the Drive.
One of the Sound Tank series.
Oh, is that what they were called?
Yeah, like the black ones had like a little green top.
Well, no, not quite. If you think the Tube Scream is green with a silver button that you press, the old original one, the AD9 was the delay. I only know that one because that's the one I have.
Yeah.
That was pink and same format. Yeah. There was also a Drive that came out at that time.
Oh.
She uses one of those, but will only use it with half dead batteries.
Yeah, the old Eric Johnson thing.
Yeah. Which is brilliant. Like the she says that you get a completely different tone out of a dying battery in one of those things than you do with it being plugged into the mains.
Yeah.
It loses all its
character
by being plugged into a 9-volt.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is true. That's sort of why like Voodoo Labs and all those places do the selectable voltage.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Where you can sort of round it down to wherever you want it and then consistently get that right voltage.
That's really cool. It's just something that I've never thought of as being something to think about. I think it's brilliant that there's the as a guitarist with, you know, all the money to spend that she's concerned about making sure she uses.
Making sure her tech flattens all the batteries.
Yeah, exactly. That's just, cool.
He's really sitting there backstage licking them until they're at the right charge.
Oh, God.
I've got a pimple.
Jesus. Anyway, we are running massively over time, so I will have to draw this podcast to a close. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in this week. We will be back next week. You never know. I may even live up to my promise of getting James Singer over from the store, but it happened.
James Singer doesn't exist.
No, he might not. What? That would have been so much better. Imagine if we'd done that. Actually, next series of podcasts, let's do that. Or maybe later on in the series of podcasts, let's do that. Like introduce, say that we're going to have someone on and then just never have them on. Maybe a famous person.
Or the next podcast, we get someone on that it's not James, but we call them James Singer.
That's an even better idea. Anyway, I have to edit this bit out. I hope I don't forget. Anyway, thanks very much, everyone, for tuning into the podcast this week. We will be back next week with more guitar-based shenanigans. If you want to get hold of me in the meantime, you can do on Twitter at Yosef_900 or via email on joe.branton@gak.co.uk. Luke Taft, how can people get hold of you?
James.singer@gak.co.uk.
Brilliant. And Joss Allen, how can people get hold of you?
Instagram, Joss_Allen. Just search me on there. YouTube, obviously you can go onto the Gak Vision YouTube, and then Joss.Allen@gak.co.uk.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks very much, everyone. See you later. Bye.
Bye.
Boom.